Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Hunter ceiling fans. They provide consistent comfort all year round and also help reduce energy costs. Right now, save big on Hunter ceiling fans when you shop at Menards. View our entire selection of Hunter ceiling fans today on Menards.com. Plus, our weekly flyer with plenty more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey, Crime Salad listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Crime Salad, where we talk true crime. My name is Ashley.
And I'm Ricky.
And for this week's episode, we would like to give you a warning because the contents may be disturbing to some listeners. This episode does include mentions of rape of a child and other details that may be very disturbing, which they are. You may have heard this story. Maybe you're familiar with it. But it's the story of Josef Fritzl, who was born on April 9th of 1935 in Amstetten, Austria, to parents Josef and Maria. And just a little history fact, the control under the Nazi Germany went into effect in March of 1938, 3 years after Fritzl's birth. Now, according to Josef, Maria only got pregnant with him to prove to her husband that she wasn't infertile. After Josef was born, and also was the only child, his mother treated him like a burden. It was believed that she didn't have any attachment or gave any care or love toward him at all, and she was mean and abusive. The father, Josef Sr., was known to be an alcoholic and wasn't around much and left the family when their son was about 4 years old, and it's believed that he died while fighting in World War II. So Maria, she's raising Josef by herself. Maria was very domineering. She would beat Josef until he was black and blue. And she would also humiliate him and attack him without any reason, which you will see this is kind of like a pattern that we'll see later as to how Josef would treat his own family.
Jesus.
Now, Josef, he grew up in the Nazi era where strictness and discipline were important. He brought those elements to raise his own children. He also grew up with an anger towards his mother, being that he lived with the feeling of never feeling wanted. Josef left school at age 16 to attend vocational school. As a young man, Josef would do creepy things like follow women in the park, walking behind them with his hand in his pants, masturbating. At one time, he got caught and decided to move on to other things like listening to people having sex while their window was open.
So he's a little creep.
Yes. But he ended up meeting 17-year-old Rosemarie when she was 21 years old and they got married. Rosemarie was described as shy and weak, nothing like Josef's mom was. Rosemarie was described as a poorly educated woman when she met Josef, and she was working as a kitchen helper. To Josef, she was the perfect woman to make into a submissive wife, accustomed to knowing nothing, and did not question anything Josef did. She knew Josef was the one in charge, and it's alleged that Yosef would beat Rosemarie. Yet, she was very loyal to her husband. Rosemarie was a stay-at-home mom with her 7 children, and he was a very shitty husband and father to his family.
Holy cow, 7 children?
Yes, 2 sons and 5 daughters.
Yikes.
Now, although he was a crappy husband and he was abusive, angry, and a controlling individual, Yosef was known to be hardworking. He was known to be highly intelligent and yet very secretive. For example, one coworker said that he worked side by side with Yosef for months. And the only thing the coworker ever learned about Yosef was that Yosef was married. The coworker didn't know that Yosef had kids at all. Because Yosef didn't talk about his kids, he didn't have any photographs on his desk, nor did he take any personal phone calls. Yosef was an electrical engineer and electrician working for a steel industry company. And eventually, he would work as a salesman within the industry and travel throughout Austria. On top of this job, he had another job where he would work somewhere that would send lingerie in the mail, which is a little different from the engineering job, but it didn't last long.
Sounds like he moved on to his dream job.
Yeah, the creepy side of him.
Right.
Now, in 1972, he bought an inn, which was like a guest house, and adjacent to that was a campsite that he bought on Monsey Lake, and this would be an area where he would maintain for people to camp out and enjoy the lake, and he also owned multiple properties that he would rent out for people to go on vacation. This went on until 1995 or 1996, when he would retire. He was also into selling real estate and selling machines. He was really into building stuff and tinkering away with stuff. He just kept busy.
Yeah, seems like it.
Yeah, and it's believed that he was also busy with other things too. Once his criminal background came to the surface later, it's believed that he could have been involved in a number of unsolved murders and other crimes around the area. These would have occurred around the same time that he and his wife were renting out properties and maintaining the campsite in Linz, Austria. On August 17th of 1966, Anna Neumayer was found in a field, and it looked like she was killed by a captive bolt pistol, which is primarily used for livestock. And it works by firing a retractable metal bolt to put an animal down or to knock them immediately unconscious. Yosef wasn't working too far from where Anna's body was found, and he was looked at as a person of interest, but at the time, there was no evidence linking him to the crime. Unfortunately, her murder was left unsolved. In September of 1967, Yosef broke into a home of a 24-year-old woman while her husband was away, held her at knife point, and raped her, threatening to kill her if she made a sound. And it's written in many articles that he spent 1.5 years in prison, but his record was purged after 15 years, so it's hard to know for sure. Other sources say that he was in prison for 12 months.
I mean, regardless, it's not that long.
Yeah, it's not that long. And this is the kind of guy that we're dealing with. He's not a good man at all. But as far as the kids that he and Rosemarie had together, they wanted to hide this from them. So Rosemarie would tell the kids that dad's going away for a year, never bringing it to their attention that he's actually going to prison because of what he did.
Oh, so the wife was aware of the type of stuff that he was doing?
At this point, yeah.
Okay. I kind of pictured her to be like super naive or something like that, but she knew of it?
She knew of it. And I think she really played that role just to be naive, look the other way. She's just very loyal to her husband and very submissive type person, which is really sad.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, in this same year, there was another rape allegation of a younger woman in her 20s, but there was no evidence found to link him to the crime, so nothing was done. Then on November 22nd of 1986, 2 divers who were at Monsey Lake found a body that belonged to 17-year-old Martina Posch. The body that they found was partially clothed in shallow water, and it was also wrapped in tarps and tied with wire. An autopsy was done, which determined that she was strangled, and she also had injuries to her back as well. Being that she didn't have any defensive wounds, it's believed that the perpetrator kept her face down while she was murdered. And being that she was partially clothed indicated that there was a possible sexual motive. Martina Posch was just 17 years old when her life took a tragic turn in November of 1986. She lived with her mother in a town in Upper Austria. Martina was working as an office clerk at a nearby construction company, which was just a few miles from her home. Now, normally she would catch the 6:42 a.m. bus, but something threw off her usual path on this particular morning. November 12th of 1986, Martina left the house around 6:40 a.m., running towards a bus stop. That day was supposed to be her vacation, but Martina decided to go into work anyway. Her grandfather, who heard her leave, later said that he thought she might have been a bit too late to catch the bus, and from the looks of it, Martina never got on that bus. When Martina didn't meet her boyfriend as planned at 5 p.m. that evening, he called her mom to check in. Worried, Martina's mom called her supervisor, only to find out that Martina hadn't shown up for work at all. At that point, law enforcement were contacted and a search began. Martina wasn't found during the search, but sadly, her body would be found 10 days later in shallow water at Lake Monsey. And if you remember, this is the same lake where Josef and his wife own this campground. They own multiple properties, and they actually owned a boarding house right next to the place where Martina's body was found. And on top of that, she looked like his daughter, supposedly.
Oh, that's gross. You know, another thing that's crazy about this situation is that this was supposed to be her vacation. So when she didn't show up to work, they were probably like, well, she just didn't come in, whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it was probably shrugged off a little bit, at least.
Yeah.
You know, where maybe they would have been more alarmed.
Right. Like, she was like, well, you know what? I don't feel like coming in today. I'm supposed to be on vacation. I'm
like, yeah, like, whatever. Yeah. I'm not coming in.
Now, there are some who believe that she was targeted by someone that she knew, while others think it could have been Josef or possibly another stranger. Unfortunately, despite the number of different theories and speculation around Martina's case, it's been unsolved for nearly 40 years. Now, one thing I did find out was the tarps that she was wrapped in. They had a defect in them, so when they were investigated, a company who produced those tarps said that when these tarps had a defect, these would have been discounted tarps and sold to an employee, so these would have never been on shelves in the store. And so they interviewed hundreds of people, even one of those people being Josef, but nothing came from it.
Oh, so Josef worked at one of those tarp companies?
You know what? I couldn't find that exactly because I was looking for it, but
yeah, it could have been like friend or family or something, but still.
But I know that they were looking into him.
Yeah. So what's crazy to me though is that after every one of these incidents, some people are always pointing to Josef. Like it paints a picture of who he was as a person.
Yeah.
And what the community thought of him.
He's a creepy guy and he looks creepy. Have you seen a picture of him?
No, I haven't.
He kind of reminds me of like what the Grinch would look like in real life.
Ooh.
Like his eyebrows are kind of like grinchy.
Like a character.
Yeah, but not a nice, not a good character. At all. Just right. Like an evil individual. Like very Grinch-like.
Right. But not like the Grinch. He doesn't turn nice in the end.
No. Not at all.
Spoiler alert.
So as we mentioned, Josef and Rosemarie, they had seven children together. Doris, Rosemarie Jr., Harold, Josef Jr., Gabrielle, Ulrike, which I don't think I'm pronouncing that right, but it's U-L-R-I-K-E, and Elizabeth. Josef, he was very controlling over his seven children. Like when he would walk into a room, his children would be completely silent. And if they weren't silent, they would be hit. If they forgot to say please and thank you, they would be hit. Josef paid extra attention to Elizabeth's behavior. She had to act more proper than her other siblings or she'd pay the price. And their mother would never stick up for their children because she too was most likely being controlled. And Rosemarie's sister would later say that Rosemarie was, in fact, very controlled and would often be put down, belittled in front of people. And he would make these crude jokes about Rosemarie. And it would be hurtful to watch her go through this, knowing that behind the scenes was probably much worse. It was also known within the family that they weren't having intercourse or anything at all.
So it makes you wonder, was having a family just like an image? You know, I'm a family man, like a way to disguise himself or the person that he truly was.
Yeah, it really seems like that. And it seems even more apparent once we get like further into the story, because it really seems like a cover almost.
Yeah, like a front.
Like he's just trying to like cover who he really is. Like, oh yeah, I'm this family guy. I have this really good job and I have all these kids and everything's really good.
Yeah, that's the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah, but he wasn't a very loyal husband at all. He would brag to people saying that he would get mistresses pregnant while he was away on business trips. And he would even tell his wife what he did too.
It's almost like he got off on this, like making his wife feel horrible.
Yeah, I get that feeling too. Like he just got some sort of like excitement out of this.
Or like power or something.
Now, as we mentioned, the daughter that was heavily targeted, Elizabeth. She was born on April 6th of 1966. She was the fourth child out of the seven kids. And when Elizabeth was around 11 or 12 years old, Yosef began raping her. Elizabeth didn't tell anyone because she knew no one could overpower her father. And he would continue raping her over the years until she was 42 years old.
42 years old?
Yes.
Holy cow, like all of that time? It's her whole life.
Yeah, it's like all she knew. This guy is a very evil, ruthless man. In 1978, Yosef applied for a building permit for an extension with basement on the family's Amstetten home. And this extension took Yosef 5 years to complete. And when he was done with it, the inspectors checked everything out and said it looked great. But Yosef did not show the inspectors everything. We'll talk more about that once we, you know, get further into the story.
Now, did he design it?
Yes. He was a builder. He was like this engineer type guy. He liked to build things and...
Okay. So he pretty much made the plans and then brought it to them for approval.
Yes.
Wasn't the other way around.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
So Elizabeth, like we said, she definitely got the worst of it. And it's believed that she was the only one who was sexually abused by her father. This may have been because she was the only one of the kids who resembled his mother. And Yosef would later say that she also reminded him of himself in a sense because she was very stubborn and was the only one of the children who would rebel against him.
Wait, like Yosef's mother?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is a total creep. He's a total monster. And I'm assuming with his disgusting control over his family and how he treated his kids, I wouldn't put it past him that he did things with his other children as well. But poor Elizabeth, she went through so much at such a young age. So Elizabeth, she's trying to get out of the situation. And at 15 years old, Elizabeth went to a waitress training program at Rosenberger Highway rest stop. She slept in a dormitory below the kitchen with the other students. This was a great escape from her father. But her freedom came to a freezing halt on January 28th of 1983. So Elizabeth, who was 16 years old now, she had ran away from home and she went to Vienna, where she was staying with a friend from work. And after 3 weeks, she was found by the police and she was returned home.
Wow. So she almost made it out.
Almost.
But here's the bad part. What happened to her when she got home?
Yeah, we don't know all the details, but I mean, I can only imagine. Now, Elizabeth, she told herself that she would stick it out until her waitress training program was over. Then she'd be free. The waitress program ended in the summer of 1984, and Elizabeth was offered a job in Linz. This was a moment where she felt like she was finally going to get away from her father. August of 1984, Elizabeth turned 18.
So at 18, couldn't she just leave?
Well, the legal age of adulthood in Austria was 19 years old, and it wasn't lowered to 18 until 2001 in Austria. So she was approaching adulthood. She was soon on her way out.
Yeah, just one more year.
Yet, on August 28th of 1984, Yosef told Elizabeth that he needed help carrying a door into the basement. And once they got into the basement, he covered her face with a cloth soaked in chloroform until she passed out. And he dragged her into the basement.
Whoa. Okay. So I assume this was brainwash or something and she just never left. But he actually kidnapped her, forced her to stay.
Yeah. And he did this when no one was home. So
in this addition that he built, did he build it specifically for that reason?
I'm thinking, yeah.
Holy cow.
Yosef, he then chained Elizabeth to a metal post behind the bed, and the chain was so short that she could only move a few inches from the bed. He left her like this for 2 days. And on the second day, Yosef came down and raped her. He would put her on a leash to take her to the restroom. After the 2 days passed, Yosef adjusted the chain so it was around Elizabeth's waist so she could reach the toilet on her own. How nice, right? She was then kept on this length of chain for 6 to 9 months. Now, Elizabeth is unsure how often Yosef raped her during this time. Yosef did eventually remove the chains on Elizabeth to make it easier for him to rape her. He rarely spoke to her. It was just this constant rape, lights out, lights on, rape, lights out, over and over again.
Oh my God, that's disgusting.
Now, on August 29th, Rosemarie, she reported Elizabeth missing. And to cover his tracks, Yosef forced Elizabeth to write a letter postmarked September 21st, 1984, saying that she didn't want to live at home anymore. So she went to live with a friend. And Elizabeth told her parents in that letter to not look for her. And if they did, she would leave the country. After reading this letter with Rosemarie, as if he hadn't seen it already, Yosef told Rosemarie that Elizabeth most likely ran away to join a cult. Because Elizabeth had run away before, so the story didn't seem that far-fetched.
Wow. That's crazy.
So with this letter, the police, they stopped looking into Elizabeth's disappearance. It was just that easy.
Yeah.
And this case was never officially investigated or anything, or the letters or anything like that. Now, back in the dungeon / basement, Yosef told Elizabeth that if she tried to attack him or if she tried to escape, that he would gas her. Before he would leave the basement, he would mess with something near the door to make it seem like he was setting up a device to gas her. Yosef also said that if Elizabeth tried to open the door, she'd be killed by an electric shock.
Wow. So this is like fear-based tactics.
Yes. And Elizabeth, she never wanted to test these things out. She never wanted to find out if this would be true because, I mean, she could be killed.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, if he created this whole basement extension just to hold her captive, never, you know, expecting her to see daylight, killing her really didn't seem out of the question.
Yeah, not at all.
Yosef raped Elizabeth over 3,000 times, but he never looked her in the face. And he refused to use any type of contraceptives. Yosef also physically abused Elizabeth and made her reenact scenes from violent pornography.
That's gross. So he didn't really look at her as a daughter or human or human even. This is just an object, a sex object even.
Yeah. Now, in the summer of 1986, Elizabeth became pregnant with her first child but suffered a miscarriage.
Jeez.
Her first surviving child, Kirsten, was born in 1988. Yosef did not return to the basement until 10 days after Kirsten's birth. Now, before Kirsten was born, Elizabeth begged Yosef to bring her a medical book on birth, and he eventually did. He also brought her a pair of scissors, towels, disinfectants, and diapers.
Wait, so she's asking for a book on just what to expect?
How to give birth and what to do.
Yeah, because she wouldn't know.
No, but how kind is it of him to bring her these things and then just leave her there for 10 days?
It's awful.
Yeah. Now, Elizabeth did have another child named Stefan in 1990 and a daughter, Lisa, in 1992. And at this time, there's three surviving kids, and there's just not enough room in the basement for Elizabeth and the three children, Kirsten, Stefan, and Lisa. So Josef decided that the baby, Lisa, would go live upstairs with Rosemary. So the two other children stayed with Elizabeth, who was in the basement.
How the heck do you pull that off?
So on May 19th of 1993, nine-month-old Lisa was left in a box on the Fritzl house doorstep. She weighed 12 pounds and was 24 inches long. And attached to the box was a letter from Elizabeth that said, "Dear parents, I'm leaving you my little daughter, Lisa. Take good care of my little girl. You will probably be shocked to hear from me after all these years, and with a real live surprise, no less. I breastfed her for 6.5 months, and now she drinks milk from the bottle. She is a good girl, and she eats everything else from the spoon." Now, I'm unsure if this is the exact order that the letter goes, but we found bits and pieces of this letter in different articles.
I just can't believe that he tried to pull something like this off. I mean, it's 1993. This isn't the 40s or something like that, you know? Like, how did she not call the police? The wife, I'm talking. Not to mention the children that lived in the basement. How did they not hear children? Mm-hmm. It's like a mini daycare down there.
Well, Josef decided to take that into his own hands, and he brought the letter to the authorities himself. Mm. And he also brought an old notebook of Elizabeth's just in case they wanted to match the handwriting styles. You know, like, this is actually her writing. She wrote this letter. And Josef told authorities that he wanted to adopt his granddaughter that she left on the doorstep. So within a year, the adoption was official.
Oh, okay. So I missed that it was a letter from his daughter giving
Elizabeth, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought this was just some random baby, so I thought there would be a ton of, like, investigation.
No, this is Elizabeth's baby that
okay. He
physically put on the doorstep, but made it look like Elizabeth dropped right. the baby off, and she's like, "I don't want to take care of it. Take care of her. I'm gone."
Okay. It's a little more believable then. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. So in 1994, Josef, he went to Thailand for 3 weeks, and it's assumed that he left a stockpile of food for Elizabeth and the two children in the basement. And during this same year, she also gave birth to another child, Monica. On December 16th, 1994, the baby, who was now 9 months old, was left in Lisa's stroller outside the Fritzl home. So kind of like the similar situation. The baby was just left there. Josef called the Fritzl house and pretended to be Elizabeth. He told Rosemary, "I just left her at your door." Rosemary was shocked to receive a call from Elizabeth, for one, because she just got a new number, so how in the world did Elizabeth know the new number? And she just didn't question it too much because she agreed to raise the baby. Now, there's another source that says Josef used a voice recording of Elizabeth saying, "I just left her at your door," and played that over the phone, but I'm not sure which story is correct.
Okay. I was wondering if he was putting on, like, a girl voice, or if he found, like, someone to,
like,
talk.
Like, is she that naive to be like, "Well, hold on, this is you, Josef," you know?
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, though, it doesn't seem like it was that hard for him to control the narrative at the house.
No.
He had complete control of the household, complete control of his wife. It's crazy to me.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Elizabeth gave birth to two more children who were actually twins, Alexander and Michael, born in 1996. And right after birth, Michael had breathing difficulties and was turning blue. So Elizabeth begged Joseph to seek medical attention, but he said, "What will be, will be." And Michael passed away within a few days. And Joseph incinerated Michael's body in the furnace, then spread the ashes in the garden.
Holy cow.
And as for the other twin, Alexander, he was sent to live upstairs with the Fritzels.
So there's four kids living upstairs now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now there's two kids still living downstairs. It makes you wonder why he chose, just like in his own family, he chose to abuse one kid out of, what, seven of them or something like that.
Yeah. There are some things that I read that he sat with a psychiatrist and he said, well, it's because a few things, like there wasn't enough room, but then he would say that they needed more medical attention than the other ones. So
stuff like that, but still, and then two kids died.
Yeah. Elizabeth would have one last child named Felix, who was born on December 16th of 2002. Felix was kept in the basement because Rosemary couldn't handle another child. However, even though Elizabeth was in this situation that she was in, it didn't stop her from being the best mother that she could be. She was great with the children. Social workers would come to the Fritzel home to check on the welfare of the adopted children, never knowing the secrets that hid below the home. The social workers found nothing suspicious, and they even wrote that the Fritzels are very loving with their children. Joseph was much nicer to the upstairs children than he was with his own children, who he had years prior with Rosemary. These kids were given encouragement, and they were even allowed to take gymnastics and music lessons. So they're living like this normal life.
It just makes me wonder what type of mental state he was in that he was able to justify this type of behavior and the choices that he made.
For years, too. Like, this is 2002. She just had her last child. Now, Joseph was really nice to the adopted children who were living upstairs with them. However, he was not nice at all to the downstairs children. He would punish them by turning the lights off so they would be living in complete darkness. He would withhold food, and he would actually show them pictures of the upstairs children living a normal life, playing outside, doing gymnastics and things like that. Almost like rubbing it in their face. Like, look what they get to do.
That's so cruel.
And the Fritzels, they weren't the only ones living in this house on this property. So around 100 tenants rented rooms in the Fritzels' house, and they would be told if they went to the garden or the basement, they would be evicted immediately. Tenants later said that they would hear noises from the basement, but Joseph, he would say, it's just the pipes. No one ever thought that there was anything suspicious going on.
So this might be a dumb question, but this is 100 tenants over the years, correct?
I'm assuming, yeah.
Right, not just some giant apartment complex or something.
There was multiple rooms, but yeah, I'm thinking just like over the years. So as years went on with this horrible lifestyle that he forced Elizabeth, his daughter, into and the children that she birthed, he started to see Elizabeth not as a daughter, but as a wife, and she was his property. And the children that she birthed, he convinced himself that this was his family. He would have family meals, and he believed that he was providing them with this normal family lifestyle and normal family things, like helping the kids with their education. He would bring the kids snow from outside so that they could see what it's like and see what it feels like. And he would share with Elizabeth photographs of the four children who were living upstairs, which is like the most sadistic thing ever to do, because he's holding his daughter and her children as prisoners in his makeshift dungeon where they were meant to be hidden from the world.
Yeah, it's like he had the chosen children and then just these like forgotten ones that were shoved in the basement. So in the basement, though, there was a bathroom, there was all of that type of stuff, right? Did they live a normal life like that, or were they literally locked in a room?
It wasn't nice at all. However, Elizabeth she would try to make it the best that she could with what she was forced to live in. There was a bathroom, there was a sink, but it was very small. And the extension that was built in the basement, it was more like a dungeon, really. It was 5.5 feet high. So like if you're 5 foot, it's like right there. 377 square feet. So very small area.
Okay.
And it was soundproofed.
Oh, so that explains the noise and everything. So one question I do have, though, is did she always see herself as a prisoner, or was she just totally brainwashed? Like she, you said she was a great parent. Was she just trying to be strong and do this for the children and to give them, you know, the most normal life that she could, that type of stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she was just trying to make the best of it and give them, you know, what she could give, even though she knew it was wrong. And she knew it was wrong at a young age because, remember, she wanted to get out. She was trying to get into to waitressing training so she can just get the hell out of there. But
all these years, you said she was 40-something when she finally gets out. Did she remain hopeful that she would be able to escape and give her children a normal life or whatever?
I mean, if you imagine yourself in that situation, you're in this basement and there's no way out. It had to have crossed her mind that she could have died there.
Yeah.
Like, how else are you going to get out if you're threatened that you're going to get gassed or, you know, like, what is this guy capable of? He rapes her every day, multiple times. And it's just like, you're like, helpless.
Like, this is it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this extension of the dungeon basement area, it actually had 5 different rooms and 8 doors. And to get to this hidden dungeon door, you had to actually go through 5 different rooms and 8 doors. The door to the dungeon was hidden behind shelves, and it was only 3 foot 3 inches tall. The dungeon door was really 2 doors, a concrete reinforced metal door that weighed 661 pounds, and another steel door. There were locks on the dungeon door that could only be opened with a special code and a remote.
Wow. So it's pretty sophisticated.
Yeah. Now, once you got through the dungeon door, you would enter a narrow hallway that led to the single dungeon room. The dungeon room had a shower, sink, toilet, and a hot plate. There was absolutely no windows, so during the summer months, it would be extremely hot. However, because Yosef was wanting to make a more comfortable space, he was kind enough to let them have a television. He would come down every 3 days or so to bring some food and also to rape Elizabeth, where she would become pregnant at least 9 different times. So 7 living children, 2 who passed away. Elizabeth and her children, Kirsten, Stefan, and Felix, they spent years living in this basement, completely hidden from the world. Kirsten, Elizabeth's firstborn, came into the world in 1988, followed by Stefan in 1990 and Felix much later in 2002. So these children grew up knowing nothing beyond the confines of that basement. They never felt grass beneath their feet. They never breathed fresh air or experienced the joy of playing with other children. And the only connection to the outside world was through a TV, which gave them a small, distant glimpse of what life was actually like beyond those walls. By the time Felix was born, Kirsten and Stefan were already 14 and 12 years old, having spent their entire lives in that dark, hidden place that was covered in mold and infested with rats.
So for a lot of this episode, I've listened and I thought the wife knew what was going on. At least, like, maybe she was naive to it. But now hearing how it was designed and how the layout actually was in the basement, I don't think she did.
No. She might have questioned, like, why are you always going down there? Like, what's down there? But she would never question because hell would be raised if she even asked.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, fast forward a few years to the night of April 18th of 2008. Kirsten, who was now 19 years old, her health was deteriorating. And Elizabeth, she begged Yosef to take her to the hospital, and he finally caved. He said that he would take her the following morning. He couldn't carry Kirsten on her own. Remember, she's 19 years old. So he had 42-year-old Elizabeth helping him. and this was Elizabeth's first time seeing the light of day for nearly 24 years, and it was Kirsten's first time ever. After Kirsten was outside, Elizabeth was forced back into the dungeon while Yosef called an ambulance. Now, when Kirsten arrived at the hospital, the staff knew something wasn't right. At 10:37 a.m., the hospital called the police about a mysterious female person. The female, aka Kirsten, was unresponsive, in critical condition, and had been severely neglected. The staff questioned Yosef on how he knew this girl. Yosef made up a story about how he found the girl in a stairwell.
Right.
I mean, he got away with his stories for how long, so why not believe him?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kirsten was actually carrying a note from her mother, Elizabeth, that she needed medical attention, and the hospital said that they needed to hear from the mother to understand more about the girl's medical history. So police, they started looking back into Elizabeth's missing persons case. And Yosef told the police about the cult, that she, you know, ran away from home. She went to this cult. And he also gave them a letter that he got from Elizabeth in January of 2008. And this letter said that her son Felix was sick and had epileptic seizures and symptoms of paralysis, but recovered. The letter also said Kirsten had health problems, including circulatory symptoms and stabbing chest pains. The letter said Elizabeth, Stefan, and Felix would come home soon. The letter was postmarked from a town around 45 minutes away. So the police, they went to that town to see if any doctors treated Kirsten. But of course, no one knew who this person was. And police, they got in contact with an expert in cults. And they showed this guy the first letter from 1984 and the note that Kirsten was carrying when Yosef found her. And this guy said that the letters were oddly smooth, constructed, and not very authentic, and they seemed more dictated. He believed that there was no evidence of Elizabeth being in a cult.
Okay, so at least they're finally looking into this.
Yeah, finally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were television reportings about Kirsten and how doctors needed to find her mother. And Elizabeth, while she's in the basement, was actually seeing these reportings on the TV. And she once again begged Yosef to let her leave the dungeon so that she could save Kirsten. After all, it was her only hope. So on April 26th, after 23 years, 7 months, and 30 days, or 8,643 days in captivity, Yosef let Elizabeth leave the dungeon when no one was home. Elizabeth and Yosef went to visit Kirsten in the hospital. And once the hospital laid eyes on Elizabeth, they called the police. One article described Elizabeth as looking like this. Her crudely cut hair is completely white. Her lips are shrunken around toothless gums. Her face is deeply lined, her body painfully thin, her skin almost transparent.
Wow.
Yosef and Elizabeth were taken to the station and questioned separately. After being assured that she wouldn't have to see Yosef again and that her mother and kids would be safe, Elizabeth told the police what happened to her. Once Elizabeth was done telling her story, police went to the Fritzl's house to find Stefan and Felix and take them to the hospital. Kirsten was put in a medically induced coma due to oxygen deficiency and kidney problems, and for a while, doctors weren't sure if she was going to survive. Yosef Fritzl was finally officially arrested on April 27th of 2008 on charges of incest, rape, enslavement, coercion, and murder by neglect for days-old Michael, who passed away. Yosef made a full confession. Yosef said that he didn't want to molest Elizabeth until she went through puberty. He made the point that he does not molest children. And the urge to have sex with Elizabeth grew stronger and stronger. He admitted that he knew Elizabeth didn't want to have sex with her father, but the urge to finally be able to taste the forbidden fruit was too strong, he said. And he later says that the sex with Elizabeth eventually became consensual.
This dude is sick.
He talked about how when Elizabeth entered puberty, she stopped listening to him. She started drinking and smoking and running away, and that's why he had created the dungeon. He needed to create a place where he could protect her from the outside world.
Protect her? More like control her.
Yeah, here's his direct quote. "It must have been 1981 or 1982 when I started to turn a room in my cellar into a cell. I brought in a heavy dwarf steel and concrete and equipped it with a remote-controlled electrical motor, which would only open it after a numeric code was entered. I isolated the whole bunker to become soundproof. I installed a wash basin, a toilet, a bed, a cooker, and a refrigerator. Electricity and light were already installed. Perhaps someone noticed the construction works, but it would not have made any difference whether they did or not. The cellar of my house belonged to me and me alone. It was my kingdom, to which I only had access to. Everyone who lived there knew that. My wife, my children, my lodgers, and no one would have dared to enter my realm or even ask me what I was doing down there. I told everyone that my office was down there, full of private files that were my business alone, and that was enough. Everyone adhered to my rules." Now, Yosef said that he thought about letting Elizabeth go after a few weeks, but he was afraid of getting arrested. He admitted that he wanted to have children with Elizabeth. He wanted to have a proper family with a good wife and a couple kids. Joseph refused to let Elizabeth use contraceptives because he knew that if Elizabeth had children with her father, she would be unattractive to all other men. She would also always have to be with her father. Joseph believed that he provided for his cellar family. He talked about how he brought flowers to Elizabeth and toys and books for the children. He would watch a movie with the kids while Elizabeth prepared food. They would even sit at the table together to eat. He talked about how he gave Elizabeth a washing machine at the end of 2002 so she didn't have to hand wash the clothes anymore.
Oh, true hero.
Yosef talked about how he always put a time lock on the door so that if he didn't come down after a certain period of time, like if he died, the door would open. That way, the three kids and Elizabeth could escape.
Right.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
A psychiatric assessment was performed prior to the trial to make sure that Yosef was mentally fit to stand trial. And during the meetings with a psychiatrist, Yosef said that he locked his mother in a room at the top of his house and bricked over a window so she couldn't see daylight. It's alleged that he kept her there for 21 years until she died. The psychiatrist believes that due to Yosef's childhood, he was susceptible to an emotional handicap. He felt that he needed to possess an entire human being. Yosef locked up Elizabeth, his daughter, because he had the need to control someone like his mother had controlled him. And he picked Elizabeth because she showed resistance towards him. The assessment found that Yosef knew what he was doing for all of those years. He was diagnosed with a severe combined personality disorder and a serious sexual disorder. Yet he was found to be sane enough to stand trial, and the psychiatrist recommended Yosef be in a psychiatric institution for the rest of his life. Yosef's trial began on March 16th of 2009. He pleaded guilty to all counts except murder and enslavement. The defense attorney stated that Yosef was protecting his daughter by keeping her in the cellar. And he was a caring father who brought things downstairs for his family, like a Christmas tree.
Okay. Dude's delusional.
Now, Elizabeth pre-recorded her testimony so she wouldn't have to face her father, Yosef, in person. But she snuck into the courtroom in disguise. After Yosef saw Elizabeth in person, and after watching her 11 hours of testimony, he decided to change his plea to guilty on all counts. On March 19th of 2009, 73-year-old Yosef was sentenced to life in prison with eligibility for parole after 15 years at a psychiatric institution.
I mean, he's 73 years old. He got away with this for his entire life.
Yeah. Now, the whole family, except Kirsten, went to a special psychiatric clinic in Austria, and there was a specialist team of doctors and therapists, including psychiatrists, neurologists, psychotherapists, speech therapists, and physical therapists to help them get back to somewhat of a normal life. And the family worked on getting used to the sunlight and having the space to roam. They were given their own separate rooms, personal belongings, and toys to restore their spatial orientation. Kirsten was transferred to the clinic when she was well enough in June of 2008. So that's why she didn't go. She was still in the hospital. Now, Elizabeth and the downstairs kids were extremely pale. And Stefan, he wasn't even able to walk properly because he was actually taller than the dungeon, being that the dungeon ceiling was only a little over 5 feet.
Wow.
The upstairs family and the downstairs family were reunited, and the upstairs children had to undergo treatment for anger and resentment. They struggled with knowing that they were picked to live upstairs. DNA test confirmed that the six children were Yosef's, and Rosemary filed divorce.
Well, about time.
Now, the family, they eventually moved to a hideaway home in early of 2009, but they actually moved back to the clinic for the duration of the trial after a photographer broke into the house to photograph Elizabeth.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, who in the world would do that after everything the family has been through? Elizabeth, oh, it's just...
such an invasion of privacy, and for what, a little paycheck?
Now, in 2013, the cellar of the Fritzl home was filled with concrete, so no more dungeon. The house was put up for sale, but no one bought it until 2016, and it was turned into apartments. Yosef is in prison, and he changed his last name to Meroff. He shows no remorse, and it is rumored that he has dementia, and he is kept in solitary confinement. Elizabeth and her children relocated to a secluded countryside village in Austria, referred to only as Village X. Their two-story house is under constant video surveillance and is protected by a team of bodyguards. The bedroom doors remain permanently open and the walls are painted in bright, cheerful colors to create a welcoming environment. Elizabeth eventually found love with one of the bodyguards, Thomas Wagner, who moved into their home. To safeguard their privacy and start fresh, Elizabeth and her children were given new identities. The children continued to attend weekly therapy sessions, while Elizabeth, with her doctor's approval, has stopped therapy to focus on rebuilding her life. She has learned how to drive, actively helps her children with their homework, and has even started forming new relationships in the community. As for her mother, Rosemarie, she reportedly visited Elizabeth and her family once a week, though the last mention of these visits was in 2010. It is a relief to know that Elizabeth and her children are finally free from the hellish nightmare Yosef created, a twisted world that existed solely because of his control and cruelty. Yosef, a man consumed by his own demons, was believed to have carried the scars of his own abusive childhood, particularly from his mother. But let's be clear, nothing justifies the horrors he inflicted on his own daughter and her children. Elizabeth endured an unimaginable reality for years, trapped and tormented by the very person who was supposed to protect her father. Waking up every day in a dark, suffocating basement, being raped time and time again, questioning whether she would ever see the light of day ever again, or if another one of her children would die in such a place. I feel like you would lose every bit of hope, thinking that there's just no way out. No one even knows you're down there. I mean, the psychological weight that she carried is unfathomable.
Yeah, for sure. Not to mention that her father, and I said this earlier, but he did this into his 70s. So he got away with this for the majority of his life. There's literally no consequence for him. He did this. He's going to go to jail. Eventually he'll die.
Yeah, when you compare what he actually did to his daughter and her children, what they went through, the years that were stolen, the trauma, there, it just feels like justice isn't exactly served, but it also feels good that they don't have to experience this anymore and they're out and they're free and they can just live a normal life, you know, as close to normal as they can get.
Yeah, exactly. And I hope they can. I hope they can move on from this and have normal lives.
Yeah, I mean, there is some comfort in knowing that Yosef's power is finally gone and he'll live the rest of his days locked away, powerless and irrelevant. And as for Elizabeth and her children, they've proven that even after the darkest chapters, healing and resilience are possible. They survived and they're free and they can now focus on their lives and what they want to do and their strengths and their future. And Yosef isn't ever going to be a part of that ever again. He can never touch Elizabeth ever again or the children.
Yeah.
Stories like this, it just reminds us to look closer and to question more and to never stop seeking justice for those who have been silenced. If you think back, the people who heard the strange sounds in the basement, or maybe if they looked a little bit further into Elizabeth's disappearance, like when she ran away, it all just fell through the cracks. And not to mention even the unanswered questions that surround the mysterious rapes and murders near the lake where he owned those properties. It just makes you wonder. And as we end things here, we thank you for listening to Crime Salad. Please share this episode with a friend if you think that they may be interested. And also subscribe to Crime Salad if you'd like to listen to our episodes ad-free. You have that option too with Apple or Patreon. And as always, stay safe, stay vigilant, and we'll see you next week.